And welcome into the Friday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Rex Road back from Florida. He is in studio today, back in town. Joseph, I haven't seen you in forever. How are you? What's going on?
Yeah, New York, Indiana, Florida, man. It's good to be back, I'll tell you what. And I'm sorry I missed the links yesterday, but like it was good.
Good time yesterday. It took a little while to play golf. That's what happens when you have a scramble. I think I started at 1 and was out there till 7, so it was a long time out there yesterday. But we shot 8 under. Shout out to Nick Barnowski, Bill Wickett, Bob Cole, the Nashville Predators, Chris Jones of the Nashville Sounds, and myself. We shot 8 under, so I was proud of that score.
Who's the best?
I don't know. I don't know who ended up winning it. My guess is it was probably the group behind us, because I think with about 3 holes to go, they were 15 under. So, like, honestly, if somebody came in much under 15 under, I would have to say, who are you guys?
Yeah, a little, yeah, what are we Ted Knight, like, kicking the ball out of the rough. Yeah. Who is the best in your group?
It kind of alternated throughout the day. Like, there was a while I was, and then there was a while Barnowski was. Bob Cole hit some great shots yesterday. Cole almost holed one from about 90 out.
I mean, if you're going to look that much like Jim Boeheim, I would assume you'd be pretty good at golf. Yeah, Boeheim used to be the Syracuse golf coach before he was the basketball coach.
Which is incredible.
Bob Cole didn't wet himself, did he?
He did not.
Okay.
No, Bob Cole was
– one's listening.
He was dry as the golf round went on.
Shout out to Bob. Love
good
Bob.
To see. Thank you, Bob. Ian Safar, how we doing? What's going on?
Oh, doing great. Thanks. Happy Friday to everybody. So, yeah, Knicks holding off one more game for me.
There you go.
Are you allowing yourself to have a little bit of hope now?
No.
Did last night reinstall that hope that
they're
going
to come
back?
They'll have to win game 6.
Hey, man.
If they can find a way to scrape out game 6, I'll give them a shot in game 7.
All the pressure's on Indianapolis. I always want to talk like the Indianapolis Pacers, Indy. All the pressure's on the Pacers. And the Knicks have been very good on the road in the playoffs.
Is that true? All the pressure's on the Pacers?
Well, I mean, just because psychologically everybody's already buried the Knicks,
that's
right?
True.
And everybody's already put in – I mean, we've already been talking about the Pacers
– We have.
OKC finals. So,
you're correct.
So from that perspective, yes. I mean, you're right. You know, the Knicks also would like to extend their season. There's pressure on them too. But I think there's a little bit more house money feel for them. And again, like for whatever reason – you go back to their first series. They couldn't meet the Pistons at home, couldn't lose to them on the road. They beat them all 3 games in Detroit, and they've continued to be better on the road than at home. So I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
This is all we have left.
It's all we got left before, I think, frankly, if either one of them making it to the finals is going to get smashed by Oklahoma City, but we'll see what happens on
probably.
That front. But we are still alive for the New York Knicks in the Eastern Conference final. We'll see if they can extend that thing to a game 7. Coming up later this weekend when Game 6 takes place back in Indianapolis. The Stanley Cup final is set, Joe. The Edmonton Oilers' dispatch of the Dallas Stars last night in 5 games. Now, there a couple things on that game I want to get to. Edmonton goes up 2-0 in the first period. And Peter DeBoer yanks his goalie. Just immediately. Like, they have a
two
a
shots,
timeout
two goals.
On the bench. Ottinger's going back out there, and he's like, oh, no, come on back. We're going with Casey DeSmith rather than our goaltender we play a ton of money to and is probably a top 6 goaltender in the world. We're going with the backup goalie in a must-have game with the first period allowing 2 goals. It was quite a bold statement from Peter DeBoer last night.
Well, and then I'm sure you saw his quote afterward about Ottinger and about the history and about the sample size, and my goodness, did he throw him under the – I mean, like, there's throwing under the bus, and then there's, like, I don't even know what this is. This is, like, throwing under a fleet of buses.
Frankly,
DeBoer, man. Whew.
Like, that type of decision, I'm really interested to see what the aftermath of that looks like. Because on the one hand, you look at Peter DeBoer's run in Dallas, and it's pretty darn good, right? Like, they're just making conference finals all the time. Now, they've not been able to break through and get to a cup final with him as head coach. But, I mean, this is 3rd year in a row they've been in the conference final. So, on one hand, you've got a pretty good deal of success that you're going through. On the other one, if I'm Jake Ottinger, like, that's the type of move. Like, it's not just the move that you made. It's the way you did it and what you said about it, which I think is going to have some lasting effects on that relationship moving forward.
I mean, there's a little bit of, like, how did you get here, man?
Yeah.
Like, he's been tremendous.
And the thing is,
so early.
Well, and he has, like, was he good in that series? No. He wasn't terrible. Like, he was not the reason that they were losing
like
to the
soft
Oilers.
Soft goals right. Left and right. The Oilers
they could
are
not
freaking
score
good.
On them for most of the series.
That's like, weird.
It was a weird thing. But Dallas is out in five, so I guess, you know, those of you who we hear from on the text line now and then that were still worried to death that, like, Matt Duchene was going to win the Stanley Cup with the Stars. By the way, talk about complete no-show in the playoffs. Whew. He was awful in this series. Now, he was not alone, but he was awful in this series. And we have a rematch from last year, Edmonton and Florida in the Stanley Cup final. So we'll see how that goes. I hate at this point to bet against Florida because, you know, I think Rod Brind'Amour hit on something the other day. They probably don't get enough credit for just how good they are. Like, everybody immediately started going in on Carolina the other day for, like, the failure of not beating them. And it was like, yeah, these guys are pretty good. They've been to three consecutive Stanley Cup finals. Like, they're really good. So it's probably stupid to say that I think Edmonton is going to win because Florida just keeps doing nothing but winning, but it does kind of feel like Edmonton's year to me. Like, at some point.
I agree.
At some point, McDavid and Draisaitl are so good that they're going to break through and win a cup. It kind of feels like this is it.
Yeah.
The only thing that scares me about Edmonton is their goaltending just going to absolutely crater at some point, which can't happen with them.
Zach Hyman's a loss. But, I think I'm with you. I think this is the proper buildup. And you've done all the steps to get as close as possible, and now it's your time. And Florida just might be like, "Yeah, I don't give a crap."
Yeah,
I think we got a chance for a really good one. I also enjoyed some of the. I actually really loved Greg Wyshynski's tweet last night. It was like me trying to book flights and hotels. And he was like the Captain America from Avengers Endgame, like, you know, like gather up the Thor hammer.
Well, the thing is,
enjoy.
Like, That's the problem of playing in Edmonton. Like, you know, Edmonton and Dallas aren't close either, right? Like, they've been flying back and forth from Edmonton
unless
to
you're
Dallas.
The Flames, it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, like
the Kraken.
I'm trying to think. You know, flying from Edmonton to basically anywhere kind of sucks. But Edmonton to Florida is a doozy.
It is an
absolute doozy. But at least they get until Wednesday before they start. It'll start till Wednesday. So
yeah, get a little time. That should be good. I think
if I was
we gotta...
Florida, I'd probably fly up there like – I don't know, Sunday. Just get used to it up there.
I mean, it is a time of year when it's probably tolerable up there anyway. I think the Stanley Cup final has a lot more potential than the NBA final. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're both great, but I'm with you. I think OKC is about to sit around for a while, maybe be rusty in game one, but overall roll.
Predemption on the YouTube chat, our friend Johnny says, Pete DeBoer as a head coach always chokes when it counts. I could see him getting fired. It's not like Dallas is going to trade Jake Ottinger. George on the YouTube chat says, Duchene simply did not impress me during the playoffs. Ed on the text line says, as a lifelong Knicks fan, I'm convinced this is going 7, only to watch them blow a 7-point lead with 38 seconds left in Game 7. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about what we'd be talking about had the Knicks just held on in Game 1. They'd be in control. Here we'd be. They'd be up 3-2.
No, they're going to – yeah. That's going to leave a mark, and they're going to remember that one for a long time. Like, just still don't totally understand how that happened. Like, that so many things have to go exactly a certain way for you to lose that game.
I know. But, that is also the type of game – like, there are certain games that happen in a playoff series. I mean, think back to last year – like game 4 between the Preds and Canucks, like when the Preds blew that game, it was like, yeah, you're not coming back from that. Like, I know you're not technically done at that point, but you're done. Like, you're not coming back from a game blown like that to win the series. I know it was game 1, so it is a little bit different, but like when a series is that tight, you can't just blow a game like that if you're the Knicks and think that you're gonna win.
Right. Now look, I give them credit. For what they did last night.
Sure.
I mean, they controlled the game. And that's the thing. I mean, I watched this series, and I'm not sure that they're not better. I thought the Pacers would win the series, but you know, the Knicks, you know, when they can get it cooking, I think they might have a little bit higher ceiling than the Pacers. Obviously, Halliburton has been consistently great.
Yep.
You know, the guy who's been great, you know, and even getting hurt is Nesmith, Vanderbilt's own Aaron Nesmith. Go back and look at that, you know, the Vanderbilt team that Bryce Drew had that won zero games in the SEC.
It's pretty unbelievable.
I mean, I understand that Darius Garland was hurt by SEC play, but like Nesmith and Matt Ryan, like bunch of guys who at least had a cup of coffee. And you think about Stackhouse's first team. You know, he had Scottie Pippen Jr. as a freshman who was excellent right away. And Scottie Pippen doing stuff in the NBA I never thought, but it's not smoke and mirrors. And he had Nesmith, and he had Saben Lee, who also had – so now Nesmith gets hurt early in the season, but, like, that could have been a ridiculous team.
Yeah, could have been.
Sorry, Jerry.
Did not work out that way.
It did not work out that way.
615-737-1025, our phone number. And we are off and running today here on the program. We got a lot of stuff to get into today. Jared Stillman will be with us at 7 o'clock. Teron Davenport at 8. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. And the regionals beginning today. Vanderbilt, Tennessee in action this weekend. Will one and or both of them make it out of the regional and advance to the Supers? We'll get into some of those matchups coming up next. Take your thoughts on our phone and text lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to 102.5 The Game tonight for your NCAA baseball regionals coverage. The number one seed Vanderbilt Commodores hosting number four Wright State at Hawkins Field as they battle it out for a chance to move forward in the regionals. First pitch approximately 5 o'clock tonight. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Vanderbilt, the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament as regional play begins today. We'll get to Tennessee in the Knoxville regional here in just a few minutes, but Vanderbilt will take on Wright State later tonight at 5 o'clock. Louisville and ETSU starts, I believe, at 1 o'clock today in the first game in regional play in the 2-3 matchup. So we'll see where things go from there. Vanderbilt, Louisville, obviously a little bit of history. Some people were talking about that at the golf course on the driving range yesterday. Joe, you will be covering this series. What do you make of the bracket for Vanderbilt, the opportunity here? And as we discussed earlier this week, the pressure now on this group after the significance of their accomplishment of landing the number one overall seed.
Yeah. I mean, the Louisville, obviously there's a lot of history there. There's some history in the NCAA tournament. I mean, wow, there's history. And, of course, Omaha from 2019, which was one of the great.
That was electric.
Yeah. My gosh. This is so bad, and I'm sorry. I've run into a rut with my brain because I wrote a story about this dude becoming friends with Corbin. You know what I'm talking about, right?
The pitcher?
Yeah.
Luke Smith?
Thank you. Yeah. How do I forget his name? It was it was like one of those classic Corbin stories for anybody who doesn't remember. Luke Smith on the mound, just absolutely, I mean.
He was giving it to him, man.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about some farting around out there. And just the screaming, back and forth. Vanderbilt wins the game, but it becomes this viral thing with him and everything, you know. And then, like, come to find out, I don't know when I did this. So that was 2019. I probably did this story in 2023, 2022, about how, like, because he took so much crap for it. You know, that's how things go, right? And, like, Corbin reached out, and they became friends and helped. And it's, like, classic Tim Corbin story. Yep. That's probably the biggest Louisville Vanderbilt, but they play every year for the, again, my brain failing, the Battle of the – You know?
I don't know. I don't know the official name of it. No.
They play for something. Text line, absolutely light me up right now, okay, on this thing. And Louisville won this year. So, of course, you have that. And
Battle of the Barrel?
Thank you. God. No one's listening. It's fine. But, yeah, look, it's
– we need more of those in college sports. Too many people are getting rid of the props.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with, like, the beer barrel. What's wrong with fighting for a beer barrel?
Not a thing.
No, there's not one thing wrong with it. Yeah. No, all the goofy trophies, I mean, for all the things that are happening in college football, let's keep all those in college sports. But, yeah, look, there's tremendous pressure. And, of course, you know, the number one seed pressure, if you want to look at it that way, to me, it's like it doesn't seem real that they're the number one overall seed. Like, there was never any thought of that. It was a few weeks ago, are they going to host? Then you get to the point of, yeah, they're going to host, and They definitely might be a national seed, which, of course, is one of the top eight, which means you can host the Super Regional. That looked pretty good, and all of a sudden they just go to – but they've been the – you know, I believe they've been the number one seed, overall seed, one other time, which was, of course, in 07.
I remember that one.
With David Price, and a lot of people remember that one. They, you know, they did not get out of – you know, they did not get out of the first weekend, and it was Michigan shocking David Price. David Price coming into the bullpen. David Price was the, you know, the best player in college baseball that year. And they had an unbelievable team and, you know, basically a five-year rise under Corbin from the ashes to, holy cow, look at this program. And you kind of – but then that devastation. So, you know, doesn't have a lot to do with, you know, with this year, but it's interesting that that's the only time. And, of course, the number one seed in this tournament since they started doing the seeding this way, which was 1999, two teams have won it, Miami that year and Tennessee last year.
Yep.
And that bookends all the years of – and again, some years the number one overall seed is, whoa, that's the team. Tennessee in 2022.
Which they did not win.
That's the team. Yep. Yeah, they can get to Omaha.
Right.
And some years it's like, oh, okay, so they and Vanderbilt is one of the, oh, okay, well, they're the number one ROC. But still, you know, I think the pressure is, of course it's there. And you probably don't really feel it until you get on the field today. And, you know, it's a home game, but, you know, baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, baseball has always, to me, been a sport that, like, I do think that, like, Tennessee has a little bit maybe more an advantage than some teams at their place.
Is that because of the crowd or is that because of the ballpark?
Probably both. A little bit of both. But, you know, for the most part, baseball is not a sport that home field means that much.
I would agree.
You know, if you got somebody on the mound doing the job, yeah, you give a crap where you are, right? So the pressure hits today, and I think a lot of it, way more than to me, the number one seed is this program needs to get back to where it's used to being.
It's interesting to me because I think back through the kind of the history of this thing. You bring up 07. You know, there was a time where, you know, one of the narratives around Tim Corbin was, man, he's a great coach and they've had a ton of success. But when, like, postseason play comes around, they just don't get it done. Now, obviously, he shattered that with winning two national championships. So that stuff's done. And, like Tim Corbin, I don't really worry about in these situations. But, I mean, he is dealing now with a team where nobody has been through this, really, right? I mean, having postseason success, this team has to prove that they can go out there and do it. Now, I said it the other day, and I stand by this. When you have the number one overall seed, and I'm with you, you know, some years it's different than other years. But I still would say this. When you have the number one overall seed, regardless of how strong your number one seed is, when you've got matchups at home in the regional and the super regional, I think it would be a very big disappointment if they don't get to Omaha, right? Like, I think that would be a disappointment. So that's where the bar is. I'm not saying they got to go out and win, you know, absolutely win the national championship. Are they a threat too? Of course they are. But I think if you don't get to Omaha this year, we're still going to look at it. You know, all the conversations we had earlier this week about is Vanderbilt back and all that stuff. Did they ever leave? If they don't get to Omaha, there's still going to be that but at the end of it, right? It was a great year, great resurgence from the program. They win the SEC tournament, get the number one overall seed, but you didn't get to Omaha.
Yeah,
look, that's what the conversation is going to be.
I don't even think – I mean, with Vanderbilt baseball, I don't think you even say it's a great year. You know, like it's like the postseason defines your year. I think your postseason defines your year in most sports, but, I think certainly when you're a program like this with a coach with two national championships – and again, it feels long ago, but again, it was 4 years ago that they, at one point, were up 1-0 in the championship series to win another one. And it looked like Tim Corbin was going to have his third, which would have been what, his third in third in 8 years. Yep. Didn't happen. Kumar Rocker, you know, in the final game didn't happen for him. But, so it hadn't been that long, but. Yeah, I don't think you have a great year. I don't think Vanderbilt baseball has a great year unless it ends in Omaha.
I think it's fair.
And you're right that Tim Corbin, all those, you go back, I mean, they got to a super in his second year. So it was like, whoa, what is happening here? Then you kind of go back down a little bit. You get that incredible team in 07. And some of those players, Pedro Alvarez, I mean, they had so many, you know, great players. And then, yeah, it was. It took all the way until 2011. He had some great teams. It took all the way until 2011 to finally break through, get to Omaha. Then you yep. break through and you've been knocking on the door. It's interesting with this team because, again, they don't have, like some of these other teams in this field, the 1-2. I mean, even with Tennessee, again, you got a few guys who have done it at a high level and or are pro prospect, big-time pro prospect. Vanderbilt doesn't have that. They don't have star power. They just have an all-around really solid team that seems to be, you know, just doing everything well right now and peaking. But what does that mean once you get to the tournament? I don't know.
We're going to find out. Eric on the text line says, don't sleep on my ETSU baseball bucks. I'm the lone ETSU grad amongst an office of Andy grads. I'd love to steal their regional and beat Jared's Cardinals. We will not sleep on ETSU.
Nah, no one's sleeping on ETSU, man. Not at all. Yeah, I mean, look, it's fun, man. It's like this week has been, with all the SEC stuff and everything and all that crap yesterday, they're handing out huge info packets about their strength. You know, it's like, hey, wake up today. It's like, we got like the
sports.
NCAA freaking tournament yeah. today. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
Live sports, not football practice. Live sports, not football, hypothetical college discussions. I'm all for. I said it a couple weeks ago. You know, have I grown an appreciation for college baseball over the last few years due to the Vanderbilt-Tennessee rivalry? Yes, I have. I'm really all in kind of now. I think most people, once the regional yeah. starts, are like, all right, yeah, let's go. Let's do some college baseball.
Yeah, for sure. Like the Tennessee-Vanderbilt series, that's can't miss. And it was lived up to it completely this year. And, like, the SEC is so good. Like, there's a lot of good series in baseball. But, yeah, same here. And same with, I think, a lot of people. Now you can get into it. And it's really, you know, again, it is somewhat like, you know, that first day of, you know, like the basketball tournaments where yep. it's just, like, all sorts of games going on at once. It's a lot of fun.
What about the Vols? We'll get into them and their bracket coming up next. And if things don't go well for them, what does it mean for Tony Vitello and this program moving forward? We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Just the sigh of relief, maybe ending the year the way you wanted to be able to host the regionals.
Yeah, I think there are lots of bullet points you could list under, and maybe you all have already done that on, you know, that it's a good thing or it's an achievement that the guys, you know, were able to earn a regional. It's very difficult to do, to quote a really smart baseball person I talked to yesterday. But the biggest thing is we're 12 days on the road. And so I think the guys needed to get back. We played a couple extra inning games in there for whatever reason. Weather is a part of it. But we've played long games this year. So it was a taxing trip. It was a valuable one for our guys. But it was important, I think, for us to be able to sleep in our own beds, recover, use our weight room. So that's probably the biggest part of this weekend.
That's Tony Vitello as the Vols prepare for the Knoxville Regional starting today. They will play against Miami of Ohio later today. I believe 5 o'clock tonight as well. So Tennessee and Vanderbilt looks like they're starting at the exact same time tonight.
Yeah, I really wish that wasn't the case. Can we stagger this? Also, like, you know, since I just started complaining about times, we got a 5 o'clock Friday night game here at the Hawk, and then Vanderbilt, okay, 8 o'clock Saturday, okay. Got to have an 8 o'clock Sunday, do we? Do we have to have an 8 o'clock Sunday game?
I don't love that.
Don't love that. How come we can't scale things a little bit, like flip it around, please? 8 o'clock Friday, 5 o'clock Sunday. I would love that. That'd be great.
That would be great. That would be much better, I think.
That would be way better. But
they're not listening to you.
They're not. So, but yeah, it'd be great to at least stagger a little bit, you know, the Vanderbilt Tennessee.
Now I've got myself wondering, like, is there a way that I could finagle this to just go multi-screen here? So that's probably what I'll do tonight.
Yeah, there you go.
UT on one screen, Vanderbilt on the other screen, and we'll go.
So you're talking two different, totally.
Yeah, I mean,
screens.
I think they're both on, like, I know the UT one's on ESPN Plus, right? So
do you have YouTube TV?
I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So hopefully that's an option.
I
bet you it will be.
Okay. We'll see if that happens tonight. That could come in clutch. We'll see how that goes.
Yes.
So Tennessee's got Miami of Ohio tonight. They've got Wake Forest and Cincinnati also in the regional. You know, less focused on, like, the specific matchups themselves. But, you know, it's been a while since Tennessee's won a series. So this is also, it's a different setup here. Like, you know, the super regional is more of your traditional series matchup. So this is kind of different here. I am interested to see, like, if, like, does Tennessee have enough pitching to kind of get them through this here in the regionals with the way that this thing is set up here. But, like, you know, playing at home has usually been an automatic thing for Tennessee over the last few years, and it really hasn't been this year in conference play. Like, they have not fared all that well at home, not anywhere near as well as they usually do. Now, in regional play at home under Vitello, they've been unbelievable there. So can they keep that going this weekend? But they're a team that, like, frankly, as we sit here today, Joe, I fully expect Vanderbilt to get out of the regional, and then we'll see what happens in the Supers. But I expect Vanderbilt to get out of the regional. I'm not totally convinced that Tennessee is. Like, obviously, they've got a good shot. I'm not totally convinced, based on what we've seen from the Vols, that they're going to get out this weekend.
No, I'm not either. I do feel like, you know, to your point, the series thing has been really weird. You know, another thing with them, of course, has been Liam Doyle struggling. That's obviously got to change. If that doesn't, I mean, if it changed right now, then yeah, then they won't. Then I don't think they will. You know, Wake Forest is dangerous, and we've talked about, you know, Cincinnati in particular, their strength running. You know, they've got, they're one of the best base stealing teams out there, and that's Tennessee's kryptonite. But you know, it's absolutely up in the air, and that's the key. I know some of the folks over in Knoxville were advocating that maybe they should. There's always, this is the big thing here with these, especially with coaches, with teams that have an ace, a clear ace, is sometimes like, do you can trot your ace out against the four seed,
yep,
and feel great about winning that game, or do you wait and you know, good chance you're playing the two seed in the second game. And so there's a lot of talk about maybe Vitello should change it. Corbin is consistently, he goes with, and you know, it's a little different this year. You know, some years it's more distinct in terms of like a top one or a top two.
Yep.
He consistently goes with, no, I'm going with like what I do, going with the top guy, and then we'll go from there. But apparently Vitello is going with Doyle today.
Yep.
So, you know, and again, I get the thought of not doing that for sure. But also, like, sometimes it's good to just go ahead and get in that winner's bracket right away. And also, just with him struggling, I don't hate the idea of,
you need him to get going.
Yeah, get the confidence back, yeah. Dominate an opponent, go from there.
I think a lot of coaches will also say, like, he's our Friday starter, so, like, let's keep him in the routine of being the Friday starter. Like, that's the kind of the rationale behind it there. Like, definitely in the Supers it makes sense, because you want to go ahead and get that game won, right? Like, you don't want to get yourself behind the eight ball there. So, you know, that's really kind of the fascinating matchup, or the fascinating part of the postseason, is like how different the strategies are involved here when it comes to regional play versus it's different in super regional play. And then it's different again once you get back to Omaha. Like, that's the strategy part of it. From the outside looking in, I think adds to the intrigue of it a little bit when you start to look at like the coaching decisions and what all you have to factor in here.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I love that format. I love how it's like you have this double elimination thing. There's strategy that goes with that. Then you have just straight up series. And then, yeah, like you said, Omaha, you have both. You have both sides of the bracket. They do the double elimination thing, and then you have the series again. So I love the format of this. You know, there's more talk yesterday from Charlie Baker, NCAA president, about, you know, you got to expand the field, got to expand the basketball field. You know, I actually heard last week one of the analysts on ESPN is like, you know, some of these teams that are really good that didn't get in, I think UConn was one of the teams they mentioned, I think it's time to expand this to 68. No, it's not. No, it's a 64-team field, perfect. Leave it like this. By the way, someone on the text line pointing out, definitely should give some love to the Tennessee softball in the Women's College World Series, but tough loss to Oklahoma.
I mean, Oklahoma's kind of a
Oklahoma machine. Is a wagon always. Now, Carlin Pickens, probably, you know, like must-see TV is watch Carlin Pickens pitch going against Florida. So, That's I think softball is one of those sports that's really, like volleyball, has really gained some momentum in terms of, you know, building audience and stuff in the last few years. Another point I wanted to make, someone on the text line, Robbie, saying that when we talk about Vanderbilt baseball, you know, the context of this team is that they've exceeded preseason expectations. And preseason expectations do matter. That's why they, that's why we have preseason polls. So you can put in context if a team, right, like overperformed, underperformed, et cetera. I thought, but, and I agree, except that, I mean, I swear there were some polls that had Vanderbilt top 10. This texter's saying they're preseason in the middle of the top 25. Maybe. I mean, a few weeks ago, people did not think that this team was that good. Or, you know, 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. But every year there's expectations for Vanderbilt baseball, which is beautiful. That's what you want.
D1 baseball had them in the preseason ranking at 16. So that's where D1 baseball had them.
Okay. I thought somebody had them top 10. But yeah, and that is for Vanderbilt. That's, you know, that's limited. That's muted expectations. Excuse me. I mean, Vanderbilt often starts the season in the top five. So, you know, for sure that there was concerns. Again, Corbin, are they building rosters with enough power? Where is it going? Vitello won it all. All that stuff. And as this texture points out, you know, Rustin Rigdon, Brody Johnson, you got some young guys right now who are doing a lot to drive the bus for Vanderbilt.
Yep, it's all going to get started today. We'll have more to get to on the regional front for both Tennessee and Vanderbilt a little bit later in the show as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Elliot Friedman joined DVD yesterday and had some interesting comments on the Jonathan Marchessault front and what a potential trade could look like. We'll get into that coming up next. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Indianapolis. Pre-game beginning at 5:50, first pitch at 6:05. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. This is Robbie and Rex Rowe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
We asked you about Jonathan Marshall so last week.
And you were making
it clear.
I was doing work on this all week, knowing that I have homework assignments for Nashville at 1 p.m. local on Thursdays. So, yes, there is something here. But what I am under the impression it is that I don't know that he's submitted a list of teams or anything like that. I don't think we're at that point. But I think that the Predators are aware that he would consider a trade, but it would have to be a preferred destination, and I don't think, guys, there's a lot of them.
That was Elliot Friedman on for his weekly visit with DVD yesterday, discussing Jonathan Marchessault and a potential trade out of Nashville. Now, we talked about this yesterday on the show, Joe. You know, Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff threw it out there that Jonathan Marchessault, he was on his trade target list for the offseason, and that Marchessault could be open to a trade, and that maybe Montreal would be one of those preferred destinations that Friedman was talking about there, which makes sense when you think about it. I mean, he's from that area, and that would in some ways be like going home for him. So there's that part of it on the Jonathan Marchessault front. I thought, if you missed it yesterday, it was a very interesting discussion that Friedman had with DVD. You can go back and check that out. He joins them every Thursday at 1 o'clock. Really interesting stuff from him yesterday on the Marchessault front. They got into a few different things, and one point Friedman brought up, Joe, was kind of, you know, everybody talks about the Montreal part of it. You know, the salary makes this interesting, too. It's not, you know, the term makes it interesting for teams wanting to acquire him. The salary makes it interesting from the Marchessault perspective of, I mean, frankly, just go look at how people are taxed here and how people are taxed in Montreal. The $5.5 million goes a long way here. It does not go a very long way or as long in Montreal, and don't underestimate that part of it is basically what Friedman was talking about yesterday on that front as well.
Yeah. Tell you, it's like at this point, it's starting to feel like Marchessault is basically saying, you know, I don't want to be here anymore, so trade me. But I guess if I can't get like exactly what I want, I guess I'll stay and play with you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which to me, you get to that kind of feeling, and it's like, yeah, probably best to move on.
Yeah,
I'm drifting that way.
Well, I'm you know, the more this chatter kind of comes off, the more I'm starting to say, maybe something happens this offseason with Marchessault, which again, we, you know, we had some people when we had this discussion yesterday on the text line that were like, great, clear that money out, get rid of that contract. And I understand, you know, given how bad it was in year one for the team, having that thought process. But to that point, there was another point Friedman brought up yesterday about the Predators, the way they've constructed their roster, and how maybe that could drive some changes this offseason that I thought was really interesting. Here's what Elliot Friedman had to say on DVD.
I would say this. Nobody envisioned this happening a year ago. Everybody knows that what happened last year cannot happen again this year. And I think the reason that his name is even out there in a limited way is, to me, it says that if you're going to fix the problem of last season, one of them is your roster construction. And can you have your roster construct? Can you solve that problem if, for example, him and Stamkos and Forsberg are all there?
Right. All right-hand shots, for example. That's the one thing that gets talked about a lot.
So what this says to me is, and don't forget, Barry Trotz was a head coach. He understands that now. And so what it says to me is the fact that Marchessault's name has even been out there indicates to me that the Predators are saying one of the ways we may have to fix this is simply end the problem. And the other thing, too, is, as we know, there's been this whole kind of thing with Marchessault and Brunette. And since they're both coming back, you know, the Predators have to ask themselves an honest question. Do we think this can work? Do we really believe that this can work? And internally, you have to be very blunt and very, you don't have to be that way publicly, but internally, you have to be.
So I thought that was pretty fascinating from Friedman there. What did you make of what he had to say on kind of the Predators' viewpoint of this and not only the roster construction, but is it going to work with him and Brunette together?
Yeah. No, look, it's absolutely it's you have to think about that stuff. Like we've gone through the different things, you know, maybe it's good. Maybe this is actually just an honest thing. And, you know, you got somebody with a voice, and that's not a bad thing. Or maybe it's just a little bit untenable, and it's just probably better to just move on and not continue the relationship. I don't know what the exact answer is, but, I mean, I think all those are possible. Ethan from Lawrenceburg says, it's almost like Marchessault signed here to retire. Y'all should ask Trotz if he thinks that's the case next chance you get.
I don't know that I would go there.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd go there either, but that is pretty funny.
It is funny. You know, the roster construction part of this is interesting because, you know, part of your roster construction is, man, if you got a pretty good center in there, that would change a lot of your roster, right? Like if you could just get a good centerman in here to play with some of these guys, that'd probably help a lot.
Yeah. Some of them might look a little better.
You know, we've talked about it. You know, the three right-handed shots, right, of Forsberg, Marchessault, and Stamkos, particularly when they're playing together. Like when they're not playing together, it's not really that big of a deal. But when you have them all on a line together, you know, you just don't see that happen a whole lot throughout the league, and it's hard to get to certain spots in the position you need to be in when you're all right-handed. So it makes things a little bit more difficult that way. It really makes things more difficult on the power play that way too. So that's something to factor in on that front. And maybe they do look at that and think that that's a huge problem and that they've kind of overdone it, for lack of a better term, with three guys that are not exactly the same player, but play kind of similar roles and have played similar roles throughout their career. So maybe they look at it and say, all right, yeah, we all know we need a centerman. We also need, you know, a left-handed left winger or a right winger to come in and play with one of these guys. Like maybe that's the way they view it as well. Obviously, they got to change something, which is kind of Marchessault's point at the end of the year last year. So the Brunette part of it continues to be a really fascinating discussion. I said it yesterday, and I don't know the answer to this, but is it possible that Barry Trotz got through the conversations with Andrew Brunette, got through the conversations with Jonathan Marchessault, and said, yeah, I just don't know if we can make it work with Marchessault here, and we're going to have to move him this offseason?
Definitely. And again, as the noise, you know, kind of builds and clear this is a thing, it just seems to me like, you know, you've got on both sides some real consideration that that this is a thing. And again, maybe this was just inevitable. It's just a matter of when it was going to surface.
So let's say it happened. Let's say they get through this offseason and they move him. I still don't think the return's going to be a lot. Yeah. Like, you know, they were discussing maybe the idea of a hockey trade. Maybe you find the right team, the right situation, and they're willing to give you an NHL player for him.
And it's a place he's okay with.
And it's a place that, yeah, there's a lot that has to go right there. But I also still look at the term left on the contract and him being 34. And I just think there are going to be some teams that look at that and say, yeah, no thanks, I don't want that. So I don't think you're going to get a whole lot back for him. So what is the response going to be from the fan base of, all right, you went and paid this guy all this money, and he lasted 1 year, and you traded him, and you got basically nothing back for him? Like, what's the response going to be from Predators fans then?
Look, the bottom line is the response, it's still about, like, whatever it all leads to next year, and you know what are some
of the corresponding moves maybe that you free up?
Yeah, and then just really just how do some of the guys who didn't play well this year, how do they play next year? There's so much of this is just like hope they're better.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's another bad look for sure, and there's no way around it.
Yeah, I didn't know how possible it was going to be to move on from one of these contracts. I think we've always said that Marchessault is probably the most movable one of the big ones that we're talking about.
Yeah,
that they would actually probably be willing to look at. I'm interested to see if by the time training camp rolls around, is he still on the team or have they gone in a different direction at that time? We'll find out. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Jared Stillman will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Marchessault situation. The regionals coming up for Vanderbilt and Tennessee, and, of course, all things Tennessee Titans as well. The PFL World Championship semifinals are Thursday, June the 12th at Municipal Auditorium, and you can be there. Text in the keyword MATCH to 615-737-1025 to be entered to win a pair of VIP ringside tickets. Visit PFLMMA.com/schedule for more details. This is Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.